Today I'm going to concentrate on the first six trumpets. Most often, when I think of the Feast of Trumpets, I think just of the return of Jesus Christ, and the seventh trump. But oftentimes we don't spend quite enough time on the first six trumpets that are going to be blown. But I thought to start the sermon, it would be good to put everything in perspective. We don't usually go through the seals and the trumpets and the vials or the plagues on a regular Sabbath by Sabbath basis. We hit it in the fall, and it's normally just at this trumpet's time of the year that we do that. So I think it would be good to take a look at, again, the sequence of where we are when it comes to the Feast of Trumpets. We have the seven seals, and the seven seals are not the seven trumpets. The seventh one is. But starting with the seven seals, we have, and I don't know if you have a printout. Actually, I have one in the back of my Bible. It's a nice overview when you can look at something and just big seven seals, seven trumpets, seven vials, puts everything in perspective. This came from, I believe, it was a class out in ABC back in United, and I think United is still having ABC, but this was printed out and given to the students back then. I got this one from Mr. Froge. We also have it in the Book of Revelation booklet, where you can actually open it up, print it out, put it in your Bible. It's always good to do that on some of these overviews. For example, history overviews are good to do that too. But what we have with the seals before we ever come to the trumpets would be false prophets, war, famine, and pestilence would be the first four seals. Now with those, as we'll see in a few minutes, I'll go back to Matthew 24 for just a little bit. But with those, we realize Jesus Christ said that this is not the sign of the end. And we can get caught up with, major flood, major famine, major outbreak of a disease, and we could think, this has got to be the end time. But Jesus Christ said that all of these things would be happening from 31 AD on, and actually had been happening, except the false prophets saying they were Christ. There were a few of those, even before Christ came on the scene or was born on earth. But basically from 31 AD, he was saying there's still going to be wars, there's still going to be famine, there's still going to be pestilences. So don't let that surprise you. Now, after saying that, I will say that this is still a sign that we're getting close to the end, because he said that there are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, as we know, in the book of Revelation. So as the end time gets closer, maybe because of more population, more human nature on the earth, you're going to have more wars. There's no doubt about that. And with more population breaking God's laws, there is going to be more famine. There is going to be more pestilence. But there will be more false prophets as time goes along. So we can't dismiss the fact that God said, that Christ said, that there will be those four seals at the time of the end. But then we come to tribulation, and that's a period of 3.5 years. The tribulation begins basically with the abomination that is going to cause a desolation of the Jerusalem area. So you know that's a couple months leading up to that period of time is when, or right before, the tribulation will begin. And then you have the heavenly signs. So once you get to the tribulation, it's 3.5 years, but it'll be a little bit like questionable. Otherwise, you could count from the time the tribulation started. If you had the exact day, you could say, it's going to be 390 days from the time Jerusalem as this is desolated. And then we would know the day and the hour, right? So the question is there ever a time that we will know when the exact day and the exact hour is? And I don't think so. Christ said, no man knows the day nor the hour until the tribulation starts. So he didn't say that. He said, no one knows except my Father in heaven. So we have a period that is 3.5 years or so, beginning the tribulation, until Christ comes. But the heavenly signs will be the seal that will introduce the coming of Jesus Christ, the seventh trump. So that's what we have, and you'll also see heavenly signs within the seventh trump. So people might say, well, which is the heavenly sign period? Is it going to be this period or that period? You might be, squashing things together and really not making a definite point of beginning for each trumpet. Although I believe that there will be a literal blowing of trumpets that we will hear. I really think that'll be the case. When an angel blows a trumpet, I think we're going to hear it more than anybody else blowing a trumpet. So you have that heavenly sign period, and then you come, of course, to the seven trumpets. Let's go back to Matthew 24, and read a few verses out of that. Of course, the question is, in the beginning of Matthew 24, what will be the sign of your coming? And the end of this present age, what will be that sign? And then he went on to say, and let's pick it up here, and I'll be reading from verse 6 through 8, then we'll go to verse 15 and 16, and then verses 21 and 22. So here we have in verse 6 through 8, you'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not troubled. So even when World War I broke out, you might have thought, well, that's the introduction, but there wasn't enough happening. Actually, when you see what must take place, all the statistics that must be fulfilled at the time of Christ's return, it would have been too early for Christ to return World War I. It wouldn't have been too early as far as our thinking, though. We would have loved to have had him come in the middle of World War I to intervene. So he said, don't be troubled. All of these things must come to pass. The end is not yet. And then he goes on to talk about the other seals. War, famine, pestilence. And then a little later on, he said, there's going to be false Christ saying, go here, go there, because that's where Christ has come, and don't believe it. Verse 15 now. Therefore, when you see the abomination, and I'll back up to verse 13 just for a moment here. He who endures to the end shall be saved. Verse 14, and then the end will come. The last part of verse 14. Then the end will come. Therefore, when you see, coming off, then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. So that's an expression that is a little different than just a statement, when you see. It's telling us it's not going to be the same. There's going to be a desolation of Jerusalem, but the abomination that causes this desolation is not going to be quite exactly the same as during the days of, what was it, Antiochus Epiphanes. It won't be the same. It's going to be a little bit different. But still, there's going to be Jerusalem surrounded by armies, and that city is going to be taken over. And according to Zechariah 14, the Israelites, not the Palestinians, the Israelites will be taken out of the city and taken into captivity. Half the city is what it says. So let's go on now in verse 15 and 16. We just covered that. Let all those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. If you're really insecure about the end time, what you want to do is move to Jerusalem right now, basically is what it's telling us. Because the one thing we know, if we're not sure where the place of safety is, the one thing we do know is when Jerusalem is surrounded by armies and the desolation of that city is about to take place, then go to the mountains. Don't head for the beach, toward the Mediterranean Sea. Go to the mountains. In the 1930s, there was actually a fellow that moved over there. He established the church headquarters of the Church of God. We called it the Sardis Church of God, the name that we gave, but whatever the case, it was a Church of God group that kept the Sabbath, that obeyed the laws of God. And one of the men there, in fact, the two men who were the leaders during the 30s would be Duggan and Dodd. There's actually a book out, and I forget the name of the book, but anyway, the one moved over to the Middle East and to Jerusalem, set his headquarters up there. But, of course, he has since died, and I suppose if we would go there, we could die before Christ would come, especially if you're my age. Someone said this morning, well, we were talking about ankle warmers, and my wife, and I looked at this lady's ankle warmers, and she said, with these ankle warmers, and you can order socks, and you have a lifetime warranty. And I said, I don't think I'm going to live that long for socks to wear out. That's what I said. So I'm easy on socks, I guess. But when you get older, you know, the warranties, these lifetime warranties, just don't mean quite as much. Just as an aside, Sears Roebuck used to have these warranties where if the tool wore out, you know, you could take it back. And there's this guy that bought a Sears and Roebuck hammer back in, that would have been a Craftsman tool back then, maybe? Back in 1930s, was Sears Roebuck around then? 40s, whatever? Well, it was about 1990, he took that hammer back, and they had to replace it because it was under warranty. But anyway, where were we? where am I, right? Let's go on then. I finished verse 16 and just talking about going to Jerusalem, and we would know then where we would go. So basically that tells us, though, that God is going to take his people to a place of safety, doesn't it? So if he wants them to go to a place that is safe, then he would have a place of safety for the rest of the church, as he says in Revelation 3, talking about the church of Philadelphia, that there is a flight to safety. Wherever that is, I don't know. Verse 21 and 22. Then there will be great tribulation. So that's the time after Jerusalem is desolated, where you will then have a time of great tribulation. And notice, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no ever shall be. The tribulation, you have the heavenly signs, and then you have the trumpets. And I believe Christ is talking about those trumpets being blown and the disasters that come shortly thereafter. Unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, that is, saved alive physically. It's not talking about spiritually. No flesh would be saved alive physically. When we were out in Colorado, our son asked us if we'd ever seen the Star Wars series. Well, we saw the first one back in 1971 or two, maybe, or three or four. It was 70, right at 70. It's Mark Freeman saw it in 1970. Were you born yet? 77. Our son actually went with the neighbor kids. That was before we moved to San Antonio. We moved out to San Antonio in 78, so yeah, we were in Cleveland. So we saw that one, and then we didn't see any more. We haven't seen any of them. So to see number 7 was interesting. But what I saw in that movie is they were harnessing the power of the sun on this one. It looked like a whole planet that they were using, but could have been a moon or whatever. But the scene when, I hope not to, you know, hurt any of you if you haven't seen it. It was free for us, so it was, that's why we saw it. Cheap is always good. Parsimonious, I'm sorry, is always good. But you see this planet, they harnessed the power of the sun, and they were blowing up other planets after it reached a critical point where they could pour out all this energy on their enemies. The enemies were the good guys. But then the good guys come and they destroy this home base where all of this energy is being produced. And when I saw that, I thought, man, we are so small, and look what God can do. The whole planet or moon just blows up from the inside out. And it just, I still remember the scene, and I relate it to the time of trumpets and how much power God has. The outer side of this earth is going to be burned up. So this whole planet is not going to be destroyed. God is going to, after the 1,000 years and the last great day, we know, restore the earth. But the whole outer surface of the earth is going to catch on fire. It's going to be burned up. It will be the lake of fire, probably starting with the sons of Hinnom, the valley of Hinnom, right there in Jerusalem, perhaps. But whatever the case, we see in verse 22, for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Now, time will not be shortened. Some people think that the scripture is saying time will be shortened. And it doesn't say that at all. God has a plan, and I believe, based on even a couple scriptures that we're going to read today, when you see that it's for the day, the hour, the year, I believe, is mentioned in the Bible, I believe that God has a plan where at this specific point, when he decides that everything is finished, where he has protected mankind long enough, otherwise we would have blown ourselves up long, long time ago. We see that time is not going to be shortened, but these days where if God doesn't intervene, these days will have to be shortened to keep man alive on this earth. Jeremiah speaks of the same time. I'm not going to turn to it. It is a time of Jacob's trouble. And there it says, that day is great so that none is like it. So we can go back to the time of the Israelites leaving Egypt and see and read about the plagues, which we'll do on at least one of them today, because these trumpets are quite similar in many respects to these plagues that God used to plague Egypt. So let's go to the first six trumpets. Revelation 8, verses 1 and 2. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. We had a sermonette this morning about trumpets, and the individual was saying what a piercing noise a trumpet is, how you can take a symphony orchestra, and you really know when those trumpets start blaring. He said, I don't know of anything else besides a trumpet that has such a piercing sound, a fearful sound, depending on, you know, what happens. It can be taps. It can be a mellow sound, too. We know that. The only thing I thought of as a sound that is fearful, back in Montana on May Day, in Havre, Montana, which was a huge city in Montana, there was 8,000 people in that city. Can you imagine? For me, it was a huge city. That city had a place where you even had escalators. That was back in the 1950s that they had escalators. It was really uptown. But anyway, there was quite a population of Scots-Irish individuals. And on May Day, they had a parade, and I'll bet, at least to a little kid's ears, I'll bet there were 100 that had these bagpipes. And when the bagpipes started blaring, I think it'll be the trumpets first and then the bagpipes after that, because that really puts the fear of the Lord into at least the troops in World War II. You read stories of the, you know, Scottish coming around the corner and then playing their bagpipes. It was quite a sound. But anyway, it's a fearful sound. And after that first trumpet, when the second trumpet blares, I don't think people are going to be looking forward to what comes, and then the third, and then the fourth, and the fifth Everyone's going to be quite happy by the time the seventh trumpet comes. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, because some will curse God even then. So we have the first trumpet in Romans 8 and verse 7. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with fire, their blood, that is. They were thrown to the earth. And a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. When you read this, you think of Exodus 9:23, and this is probably the only time I'll turn back to Exodus, but if you'll turn back there, you'll see this was one of the plagues of Egypt. And here's what happened. Here's how it's described. Exodus chapter 9, verse 23. Now, there's another point to this story, too, showing that God does protect his people. But starting out in verse 23, Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground. So, first trumpet, you have hail and fire. And, of course, then you would have had blood because of what happened when the hail hit the animals and the people. The Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. A thunderstorm can hit the entire nation. It did. Now, Egypt is not as big as the United States. Nevertheless, geographical expanse does not limit what God can do. It hit the whole land, except God protected the land of Goshen. This is what God is going to do in the future. He is going to protect God's people. And so when these things start happening, it's just like the song we sang here a little bit earlier, put your trust in God because there is no trust in man. Human beings, the flesh, cannot help us at all. And you think of this when these major calamities begin transpiring. Verse 25, the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail struck every herb of the field, broke every tree of the field. So you can see how massive destruction that this can be. Basically, God is describing a thunderstorm. You have thunder and lightning. He's describing a thunderstorm. I looked this up, and it says that there's 16 million thunderstorms each year throughout the world, 16 million. If you like to do this, you could go to Google and just type in thunderstorms and see an active map, a video that's been taken from outer space. It'll show you where the storms are, the lightning strikes are on the earth, and you see these lightning strikes all over. Basically, there's 2,000 lightning strikes going on right now, every moment. Thunderstorm moves out, it goes to another area, 2,000 of them taking place. I should say 2,000 thunderstorms, probably more lightning strikes than the 2,000. And in the United States, there's 100,000 thunderstorms each year. It went on to tell us what kind of damage a thunderstorm can cause. Lightning is responsible for many fires around the world, and that's you've seen scenes probably where the lightning is jumping on the ground. It'll actually do that. There was a man in Florida who was on the beach. The thunderstorm was 10 miles away, and he was hit and killed. That's how far away. I don't know if it jumped on the water or what the specific location was, but when we were in Wilderness First Aid and they were talking about lightning and how to deal with it when we go up into the Grand Tetons and we have a group of kids, they asked the question, what can lightning do? And the answer was, anything it wants. So what we did, they said, don't go under a tree. Lightning storm hits in the Tetons. You're up about 10, 12,000 feet. Lightning storm hits. It's going to pass in about 20 minutes. Sit on your aluminum. No, sit on your backpack and make sure it's not metal. squat in the field, get away. If you don't, if you have metal, you know, get away and just get in a squatting position and get on your toes if at all possible. The less contact with the ground, the better. And let the lightning storm pass. It probably won't hit you. It won't hit you if you have God's protection. We had a young man named Pinecrest. The first couple years, he was a minister's child. He hadn't learned to humble himself before God too much at that time. He's since come into the church, but he was probably 13 or 14 years old at the time. And at camp, when you have a canoe trip, if you hear thunder, you get your boat out of the water and you wait it out. So they heard thunder, and they were in the process of doing that, and there was some lightning striking, a distance away. It must have been a mile away or more. And he looks up, and he says, "Is that the best you can do?" Now, it's funny because he wasn't hurt, but lightning struck just across the river. They were on the one side. Lightning struck across the other side, but it was so powerful it knocked him out of his boat. And he, to this day, I'm sure remembers that. He knows that God could do better than the first. But and some of you may have been actually there at camp at that time. But not too many people are actually killed by lightning each year. It's not a great amount. But hail, up to the size of softballs, we know, damages cars and windows, kills livestock, just as happened in Egypt. Then there are strong, up to 120-mile-per-hour winds, straight-line winds associated with thunderstorms in Independence, Missouri, here about, maybe 10 years ago, or a little less. Straight line comes through and knocks out a fast food restaurant, something like Arby's, I believe, right there in Independence. Touched nothing else around it, just came in at that one location, knocked out, destroyed the whole building. That's what can happen. And then tornadoes have winds up to about 300 miles per hour generated from a thunderstorm. And it says it can destroy all but the best-built man-made structures. I wouldn't put God to the test on that one. I think mankind would fail. And I think the building would go down. But this is just the first trumpet, brethren, the first trumpet that, the plague, I should say, that takes place. A third of the trees are burned up and all of the green grass was burned up. Second trumpet, Revelation 8 and verse 9. Revelation chapter 8 and verse 9. The second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. And that's verse 8, verse 9. A third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Now, this isn't the only place where you have a prophecy. Back in Jeremiah, it talks about God taking and rolling down the rocks as if a burnt mountain comes and hits the ocean. That's in the book of Jeremiah. And then you have also in other areas of the Bible the same thing happening. Exodus actually talks about that too. This is probably talking about a meteorite. Some call it an asteroid. But what they looked at was what would happen if a 10 kilometer in diameter meteorite hit the Earth. Now, a 10K would be 6.2 miles across. This is a 10 kilometer, meteorite. And they said it doesn't matter if it hits the ocean or the land, when it's that big. Now, I don't believe the second trumpet is talking about a meteorite that big. I think it would take too much out. It'd be too big. But whatever the case, if you just take a look at this, they said that hitting the ocean, the deepest point in the ocean is the Mariana Trench. It's 11 kilometers, which would be, 6.8, 6.9 miles down. And you have something that is 6.2 miles across here in diameter, hitting the ocean. It says that it's coming in at 30 kilometers per second. 30 kilometers per second. That's 64,800 miles per hour. Because it's about 18.6 miles per second times 60 for a minute times 60 for an hour. So just do the multiplication and you have 64,000 miles per hour. So those Russians who have the cameras on their car because so many people are trying to get insurance over in Russia and they jump in the front of the car, they've got the cameras there. But anyway, they've spotted those things, and when you see them coming across the sky, it's just boom, like that. 64,000 miles an hour. When that hits, there's very little to slow it down. In fact, it's only the crust of the earth that is going to slow that down. It says, unlike smaller meteors, it will not be slowed down much by air friction at all. So with a smaller meteor, you have it slowing down a little bit. It'll punch through the atmosphere like it's hardly even there if it's that big. A smaller one will slow down a little bit. But when a smaller one even strikes the ocean, you can imagine this big. It says the energy of the impact will vaporize the asteroid and a large amount of the Earth's crust, creating a crater more than 100 kilometers across. That's bigger than the crater that was made when Superman came from the planet of Krypton and hit the Earth. I think it's a true story. Aren't all movies made true stories? You have a huge, gigantic crater. Basically, if a crater or if a smaller meteorite hits the ocean, it's going to be Atlantic, Pacific. You can imagine the damage it's going to do if it's only one-third the size. And it may not even be one-third the size. It will destroy every ship nearby or far away. Probably a tsunami will take place. And I think ships on the ocean actually would not be destroyed by the tsunami. They're out there. But when it hits the beach, you're going to have a lot of destruction right on the ocean side and maybe even a couple miles in. So with this, you can just imagine the destruction. It does say it'll strike the waters and you will have the sea animals dying. Seas will be filled with blood, it said. A third of the sea became blood. So you can imagine what's going to happen when that transpires. Now, this is surreal to me, brethren, when I'm praying and talking about the return of Jesus Christ, as no doubt are the same thoughts when you're praying. I think I'm looking out, I see green grass, I see green trees, I see blue skies, I see everything pleasant on the outside. This time of the year, it's really nice. I can't imagine this, and it is not real to me. In Syria, if you're a Christian in Syria right now, I think you could imagine this a little bit more because of all the bombs falling on them. But for us, when we can walk outside and basically not be in fear of our lives, when we can sit down to three squares a day and go to bed at night not having any fears, this is just so foreign to us. But there will come a time, and we want God's mercy on us, and then we think of our children who may not be in the church. We think of our grandchildren, if you have grandchildren, think of them, and we like to basically dismiss this from our mind. I do. I just don't like to think this happening to our kids. I still remember back in 1960, I visited Montana in 1963. I had 1 year of Ambassador College. This was after my freshman year. My sister just had their little boy, little Todd. And he was a baby, and I got to hold him, and for about a week I was there. And I fed him the bottle, you know, and played with him a little bit, just a little guy. And I remember when I left home, I thought, Man, in 9 years is the tribulation, because back then we thought it's a lot closer. Some of you were not born in 1972. How many of you were not born in 1972 yet? So God had mercy on you. He thought, no, I've got a few more that I want in my kingdom. But the point is, it was real to me that that nephew of mine was going to be in the tribulation. It really disturbed me. Now, you still don't paint a picture of how bad it's going to be, but you know there's going to be so much loss when you read these scriptures. It's real, but it's still hard to imagine. So we sit here, and every year, as we should, go through the scenario of the trumpets. But it's still not going to be real. We need to meditate on it. We need to think about it, not just read it and leave it, because we want it to have an effect on our lives. And it doesn't have an effect on our lives when we go about our daily business. It just does not, because, again, it's so unreal. Third trumpet. The third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. This is Revelation 8, verses 10 and 11. Revelation 8, verses 10 and 11. It fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. So that's the third angel. It falls not this time affecting the oceans. It affects the waterways within the territories of wherever it's going to be. Let's say within the United States, the springs and the rivers are going to be affected. So it's different than the second one because it hits something different. Now, human beings are not used to going without water for more than a few hours. Every day we drink liquid of some type, and coffee or juice or straight water. So if we go 2 days, we're okay, because we know fasting is not going to kill you. You can go 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, depending on our age and our health. We're not going to die just in a few days. But the world doesn't fast. The first time I tried to fast was before I went to Ambassador College, and my mother said, "Greg, you've got to eat," because she noticed that I wasn't eating breakfast that day. She didn't know why. I didn't tell her. I just said, "Well, I'm not going to eat today." And she said, "Greg, you can't go without a meal." In our house, it was 7 o'clock breakfast, 12 o'clock dinner, and 6 o'clock supper is what it was. And you did not miss a meal. If you were a good mom, you're feeding your kids 3 squares a day. So you take a world that is used to food and water, and how much food they're eating, I don't know, but doesn't say anything about food. But you go a couple of days without water, and you're going to be thirsty, and you're probably going to drink anything. When you're out at sea, they've said that these individuals will start drinking ocean water because they get so thirsty. And, of course, it's so salty, it's going to kill them. The word wormwood here is mentioned only one time in the New Testament. It's right here. But in the Old Testament, it appears 8 times. And in every case, it's associated with bitterness, poison, and death. Every single case. So the passage here may not be saying that the star falling to the earth will be called wormwood. The passage may be saying that the water that is affected by whatever happens is bitter and is going to cause death. So if drinking water is unavailable, they're going to drink the water anyway. It's bitter, it's poisonous, and they're going to die. And that's going to happen. You know the Egyptians did not drink the bloody water. So again, it's something happening where so many people will be affected, and you can imagine, well, look what happened in Michigan. Was it outside of Detroit when the water was so bad? They were hauling in water. People were losing their hair. They were getting scabs on their body. And The municipality kind of overlooked it, like, no, there's nothing with the water at all. There's no problem at all. And that didn't help. It helps the politicians who come in maybe afterwards. But whatever the case, you know that water is necessary to, it has to be clean. There are people have died from drinking well water. They've had cancer from drinking the water because of the pesticides and herbicides that have been sprayed on the fields around, and it gets into the drinking water and they get cancer and they die. It's been absolutely proven. Wasn't there a movie made several years ago about that? And the woman goes into the town and she absolutely proves that these people are dying because of government ineptitude. I remember the gal who starred in it, but whatever the case, it's a proven fact. Fourth trumpet. Then the fourth angel sounds. This is Revelation 8 and verse 12. So there's a lot of people dying by this time, and it's affecting the entire earth. It's trumpets. The tribulation period affects Jacob's children, basically Manasseh and Ephraim, but these trumpet plagues are going to have an effect on the entire earth. The fourth angel sounds, a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. In Joel, we have a couple of verses that are saying the same thing. Let's go to Joel 2 and verse 10. And this is quoted in Acts chapter 2 also, this a section of Joel. It says, the earth quakes before them, verse 10, Joel 2. The earth quakes before them. The heavens tremble. The sun and moon grow dark. The stars diminish their brightness. Then going on to verse 31. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. Now, if you're ever, well, I'll tell you a story. Maybe I am repeating myself. I've been here 20 years talking, so maybe you heard this story only 20 times. I'm not sure. But Marion and I moved to Missouri in May of 1994. And I didn't know, I didn't hear the news. We just moved in. We were still unpacking at the time. We'd been there maybe 2 or 3 days. And I walked outside on the deck, and all of a sudden, I had this eerie feeling. I couldn't hear any sounds. There's no dogs barking. There was nothing. Birds weren't chirping at all. And I thought, what is happening? And it was an eclipse. The moon was eclipsing the light of the sun. And it was a strange feeling because it wasn't dark, but the light was diminished by probably about a third. And it was the strangest feeling, and at the time, not knowing what it was at first, I got the idea by kind of looking up after a while and seeing what was going on in the sun. Probably a few seconds, I don't know. If I said a few minutes, that would make me real dense, so I'll just say a few seconds. But anyway, I thought at the time, Missouri is sure a different state. I said, this has never happened in New Jersey or Ohio or Texas or Montana. I can't remember this happening. But you feel it. It is different. And so the sun actually at the source was not diminishing its power. It's just that there was smoke in the air this time talking about, or an eclipse. But at this point here, this trumpet, you would have so much smoke in the air that you would not be able to have as much brilliance, have as much light. A third of the normal light period is just where the light energy is gone. Then you have in Isaiah saying the same thing. You have the same thing in Ezekiel, so there are a number of prophecies on this. There is a group in a study. This was some scientists, and we've seen this in the movies. where it depicts, you know, the darkness on the earth. This was a team of four U.S. atmospheric and environmental scientists who modeled what would happen after a limited regional nuclear war. And they took a look at India and Pakistan because they don't have as great a megaton bombs as we do in the United States. They have the smaller Hiroshima-type, Nagasaki-type nuclear warheads. But they said that if you just have 100 of these dropped, that's a lot. But basically, if you have 100 nuclear warheads that are dropped on this earth, that's 0.03%. Or better yet, that's 0.03 hundredths of what you would actually have available to be dropped. That's how many warheads we have. We've made the treaty, you know, you get rid of your warheads over a period of time. And the answer is sure. The answer is no, thank you. 5 megatons of black carbon enter the atmosphere immediately. Black carbon comes from the burn stuff. It absorbs heat from the sun before it can reach the earth, meaning temperature drops. After 1 year, the average surface temperature of the earth falls by 2 degrees. And when you look at this, it's like, well, that's not so bad. We're in the United States, they're far, far away. Earth's falling temperatures reduces the amount of rain by 9%. That's not bad. We've had that happen in Kansas City, you know, in Columbia, 9% less. I think last year in the spring we had quite less amount of rain. Chemical reactions in the atmosphere eat away the Earth's ozone layer, so you have more radiation. Just put some more sunscreen on, you'll be okay. There was another study, and this comes from The Guardian, Environment, 2006, December 12, nuclearindustry.climatechange. And this is from the American Geophysical Union's meeting in San Francisco. And again, this takes place, this was December of 2012. They say if you drop these 100 bombs, he said the effects would be much greater than what we're talking about with global warming. And anything that's happened in history with regards to volcanic eruptions. Now, you think of some of the volcanic eruptions, Mount Vesuvius, is that it? Something like that? Where they didn't die from the molten lava, necessarily. They escaped that. The soot in the air was so thick, some of them were, of course, they were sleeping and they were covered with lava, but a lot just went into the ocean to keep cool and they died because it took all the oxygen out of the air. So you think of what happens, and this would be worse than anything that's taken place with any volcanic eruption ever. According to research, tens of millions of people would die. And that's just using 0.003. hundreds. In addition, the ozone layer talks about the problem there. Black smoke in the scenario, more than 5 million tons of sooty black smoke would spew from the resulting firestorms. The smoke would float to the upper atmosphere, get heated by the sun, and end up being carried around the world. Then bottom line, it said, the temperature on the earth would be colder than a little ice age. And it went on to say the model also showed that the smoke would stay in the upper atmosphere far longer than anyone had previously thought. Now, what's happening with this trumpet is no doubt greater than just a few warheads. Although it is interesting with the nuclear warheads they have now, they can take and, it's like the wall where you turn down the heat and you turn it from 77 to 70. The warheads now, they turn down the destruction level when it hits. I read that report sometime in the last year. I can't remember when. So they can control. What do we need? Well, we only need so much for this city, thinking that they're going to, you know, save themselves. And the answer is, I don't think so. Back in about 1961, 1960, I saw this movie. It affected me. It was the time when my dad was talking about building some underground protective, little hut, so to speak, and that if anybody comes along, he would kill them. This was our dinner conversation. I remember telling you about this. And they had the movie out where we have an attack by Russia, and so we have these what would we have after the B-29s? But they were in the air, and they had the nuclear warheads, and this cowboy, this Texas cowboy, is sitting on one of them. The bombardier, gates were not opening, and so he had to go back there. How many of you remember seeing this? This is a long time ago. So this guy sits on it, and he's the bomb drops, and he's sitting there, and he takes his cowboy hat off, and he's waving his cowboy hat, and then all of a sudden you just see the explosions. And for a 16-year-old kid, 18-year-old kid, this is just huge. It's just gigantic. And the world ends. That was the bottom line of the movie, as I remember it. The world ends. So that's just a movie, and you dismiss that. But you have nuclear warheads, and it's taking probably, this is what's happening, volcanic eruptions also probably. We just have to guess what's taking place here that is going to cause one-third of the light to be diminished. But it could be, I would think, getting closer to the sixth trumpet and the fifth trumpet, some nuclear wars that are going on. Fifth trumpet, down to the last two. The fifth angel sounds. This is now Revelation 9, verses 1 through 3. The fifth angel sounds, I saw a star fall from heaven to the earth, and to him, so this is an angel that comes down, a good angel comes down, opens the bottomless pit, smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace, the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke, and out come locusts, and they were given, a little going on now to verses 5 through 8, they were given authority to kill them, not to kill them, that is, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. In those days, men will seek death and will not find it. So here is what we have, verse 11. It says, they had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name is Hebrew is Abaddon. In Greek, it's Apollyon or Apollyon. It's almost like Napoleon, isn't it? But anyway, Apollyon. When we relate that to Revelation 17 and Revelation 13, we realize that right before the coming of Jesus Christ, Satan is going to be in charge of a war. He's going to possess the beast, and a very powerful demon will possess the false prophet. And this is what it's talking about. And there will be no nation that can fight against this beast power. I believe it's the same demon and Satan the devil who possesses all the beasts beforehand. But God is controlling it. He's not going to allow this to take place until he unlocks the bottomless pit, so to speak. It's a symbolic term. And mankind then will face the beast that is going to cause all of the armies to turn on Jesus Christ. This is the beast, this is a false prophet who will fight against Jesus Christ. And we have, on top of that, it's not just the beast and false prophet. We have one more group, and that's where we come to the sixth trumpet. The sixth trumpet, Revelation 9:14. Say to the sixth angel, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. So the four angels who had been prepared for the hour, the day, the month, and the year were released to kill a third of mankind. So this is right before the coming of Jesus Christ. Now, the army of the horsemen was 200 million. This could not have taken place in the 17th century, the 18th century, the 19th century. Could not have. And this is going to be a war that's going to be unlike any war. If you take a look at the statistics, and you're given a test on the war that killed the greatest amount of Americans, which war would you say? Civil War, Spanish-American War, World War I, or World War II, or Vietnam War? The Civil War. Civil War. We fought against each other in that war. And there certainly weren't a million people, well, 2 million people fighting in that war, I don't believe. Well, maybe there were 2 million. I can't remember the statistics, but certainly you don't have close to 200 million soldiers fighting against just one camp of soldiers fighting any war. You had a lot of Russians who were fighting back when the Germans invaded, but there weren't 200 million soldiers, to my knowledge, fighting that war. So you think, well, that can't happen. It's got to be symbolic. With China, there are 1.36 billion people in China right now. With India, there's 1.3 billion. The end time, you have the king of the south attacking the king of the north, the king of the north responding back, and then they take over the entire Middle East area. Word comes out of the east, which would be Russia, North Korea, China, India, Pakistan, Japan. Now, that's going to be quite a group of people that can counterattack, come back and attack the king of the north. This is the time when Christ is going to return, because you have the sixth trump where they gather together, 200 million man army, and it describes them in the terms that they could use back then. But basically what you have is Star Wars types of fighter pilots and jets, and the what they couldn't imagine at that time was what this really could be. But it's brimstone. It's fire coming out of a jet airplane. It's what it is, basically. So you have the largest army in the world right now is which army? It's China. It's over 2 million people. The ages in that army is basically 20 to 49, I believe, somewhere in that age. In China, military service is compulsory. They have to be in. Now, they have enough there, 2 million, where they have not conscripted the individuals in the land. But you take a look at the population and what could happen. I looked up to see the age of individuals in China. 66% of the population in China is now between the age of 16 and 59. Now, if you take 1.3 billion people and multiply it by 66%, you come up with 816 million individuals. That's just in China now, not in India. We're not talking about Russia. We're not talking about Japan. You come up with 816 million. Now, we don't need that many. Well, we don't have that many in China who would be of military age. So let's cut it in half. Let's go, instead of 16 to 60 or 20 to 60, let's go 20 to 40. Now you come down to 408 million people. And let's say half of them are women. Well, they've gotten rid of a lot of their women when they were born, you know. But let's just say, for simplicity's sake, the half of them are women. So you go from 408 million to 204 million that must go to war. So if there's a war, if you got the North attacking the South, China's sitting over here, India's sitting over here, Russia's sitting over here, and do you think Putin is going to do anything? Do you think North Korea is going to do anything? And the answer is, they want as much power as the 10 kings in Germany. So you got a major war coming. You can easily garner 200 million. You couldn't back 200 years ago, but now you can. So this is what it's talking about. And you can come up with a lot of soldiers, a lot more than that. You don't need 200 million just from one country. Think of China, by the way, right now is 20 years behind in technology as far as military arsenal compared to the United States. They're 20 years behind. But they can catch up fast. They're adding a lot of money to their budget on a regular basis. And don't put it past the United States to give them, you know, some of our jets. You know, we give away our stuff. With that, then, you can see the tremendous travesty, the sadness that's going to hit the earth, the power that's going to be on this earth, the destruction that's going to be on this earth with these six trumpets being blown. How many are going to live into the millennium? It's going to be pretty small. Some have said a third, a third, a third, two-thirds die and take from that third only one-tenth. Remember the prophecy there. So we have very few people left over. And it is unreal. You know, we throw these statistics around, we talk about it, and it's not real at all. We've seen too many movies. It's just another movie, you know. It's just another guy saying, hey, and here I am going through the Bible, hey, let's make a movie on this. And that's basically what it boils down to. And I think Satan the devil has prepared mankind to be pretty numb to so much that is happening, so much that even now we can see what's forming in the world. We just are numb to it, and we live our daily lives. It's just the care of this world. So we have to be prepared. We're reminded of this every year, brethren. But let's meditate on it. Let's think about it so that we're prepared for the coming of Jesus Christ. And let's also ask God for mercy. We have relatives, we have kids, grandkids, all of us do pretty much, and we're really concerned about them and pray that God will open the minds of many and save as many as possible so they don't have to go through these end times.